This is a Defocus Media production. Audio Jungle. What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Lyerly, resident optometry nerd.
And welcome to Defocus Media, optometry's number one podcast, where we discuss the hottest topics, latest technology, eyewear, practice management, and more. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Hey everybody, I'm Dr. Jennifer Lyerly and welcome to a new episode of the Defocus Media Podcast. I'm here with Daryl Glover, as you can see.
What's going on, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover. I'm super excited today, as always, because I am hanging out with Jennifer Lyerly, my favorite optometrist as well. What's going on, Jen?
Not a whole lot. As you guys can see, the bookcase is kind of bare back here. I'm actually in the process of making a move that I'm really excited about, but staying here in the local Raleigh area. So if it looks weirdly bare behind me, that's why. All the books will be back soon.
Nice. Well, I know when it comes to moving, that is a pain in the butt. As a matter of fact, Jay, whenever we move, my wife makes me stay out of the house because she doesn't like for me to package anything. She doesn't like for me to take anything out of a box because she wants it her way and set up the way she wants it. So I have to stay away from the house when it comes to packing and unpacking everything. How is it in your household? Do you guys work together as a team, or do you tell Mark, get out of here, don't come back for another couple of hours?
Oh no, I'm like, please God help me. We have, you know, with the baby at home, I'll take any help I can get. In fact, if I can hear any other volunteers in this area that want to come pack some boxes, you're welcome to come over. But, you know, one thing that kind of reminds me of is actually what's on my mind for this conversation, because I think the most successful doctors, the most successful people know what they don't know. And in your case, you know, I'm not so good at packing. I'm going to let Adiola do that. Yep. And I know that I don't know very much about financial planning and making the most of tax strategies and things like that. And I know I don't know that. And I know that I need to talk to an expert. And I think many of you guys realize you don't know that and need to talk to an expert. So we brought one on. Please welcome to the show, Mr. Eric Miller.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Sorry about that, Eric. Whenever Jen and I get together, we always end up just having these side conversations. I mean, if you listen to our last podcast that we just launched, you might be like, you guys talk about a lot of things on your podcast.
I listened to one that you did earlier on amplifying your profits. I thought it was awesome.
Oh,
nice. Jenny, you weren't on that one, Jen, but it was a really cool one.
I listened, though, and that actually, shout out to Perry and Dr. Adam. Yeah. They did a great job on that episode.
That was really good.
This one's going to be obviously along the same vein. So if you like that episode, you're going to love this episode.
No doubt.
Eric, you are not an optometrist, but would you mind sharing us a little bit about what you do in healthcare?
No, I'm a financial advisor. I was actually born and raised in Ohio. That's where I grew up, and to a blue collar family. And you know, I had no aspirations of owning a business at all. I'm not one of those guys that came out of the womb wanting to be an entrepreneur. But for whatever reason, I migrated towards wanting to help people on their personal finances. So I moved to Florida in 2008. I don't know if you guys remember what was happening in 2008. Of course, we're in the midst of another global financial meltdown, right? So we had the bright idea, hey, let's start a financial planning company, you know, and at that point in time. And we had only three criteria to what we wanted to do. Number one, I knew that I wanted to help people financially in a meaningful way. I just didn't want to sell them like an insurance product or an investment product. Number two, I knew I wanted to work with business owners. I mean, I like people that have that idea that they're in control of their own destiny. Mm-hmm. And then third, I wanted to work with people that I believed in the kind of healthcare that they delivered. So there are definitely types of doctors that I don't want to work with personally. You know, I don't like people that just push drugs or surgery as like the only solution for all problems. So we started working with physical therapists. Well, that was the first type of practice owner that we worked with. And we morphed into veterinarians and then, of course, optometrists. And, you know, what better way to spend your day? You know, what you do, you help people see better, right? And if I can help you get your financial condition right, you know, then I know that you're going to help a lot more people with their vision. And that's what's important to us. And that's kind of how we built our firm.
And with optometry, it's very unique, right? Because we have the medical aspect and the retail aspect. So you probably have to work a tad bit harder working with us because there's so many different buckets of money that we can actually access.
It's kind of nice, you know, because you're not completely on the reimbursement model, right? I mean, I know part of it is, but you also have cash-based services that you can provide. So to that degree, you know, you do have control over your financial outcome because of that. A lot of other practices are just 100%, you know, reimbursement, and they don't have much control over their outcome at that point.
Well, what's so interesting is, I mean, you built your entire business around specializing in healthcare workers and doctors. But I think you've probably known from working with us now that doctors, while they may be great clinicians, maybe aren't so great at managing their finances. So could you share some of the common mistakes you see that our profession is making?
Gosh, I have a list right here. We could probably go for a while on that.
I'm surprised you don't have a book over there, man.
I got one coming out, right? Okay. And it's going to be called How to Become a Financial Beast, right? Ooh. Because I really, number one, I like the title for whatever reason. But there are a lot of mistakes I think people make. And, you know, I think a lot of it comes from just where you learned personal finances from. I mean, a lot of people either learned it, you didn't learn it in school. A lot of people even learned it through, you know, a parent or the school of hard knocks. But I think, you know, here's one mistake a lot of people make, especially people that just get out of school and they start a business or they buy a business. And, you know, I think everything revolves around debt, right? There's just so much debt that you have, and you think that's the only solution to like either buy equipment or to grow a practice. It's like this idea that I just always have to use debt. And that's not necessarily true, you know? So I think, you know, trying to wrap practice owners' head around the idea that, you know, you don't always have to borrow for everything that you think you need to grow your practice. That's number one. The second big mistake too, that especially a lot of practice owners make, is that they don't systematize their profits right away. And what I mean by that is that, or they don't pay themselves like they should. You know, when you get out of school or, you know, you start a practice, it's like, okay, you're just kind of hustling. You're just trying to like, whatever money comes in goes right out in expenses. Right. And that the problem with that is that you're never going to be able to like create any kind of, reserves or buffers in your organization. You know what I mean? So I think the first thing that we try to teach every practice owner is that you really have to make sure that you put your profits as an expense, put them first, put them in there, because if COVID-19 has taught us anything, it is that we were all pretty woefully unprepared to not be able to see patients for what, 60 days, you know, somewhere along the line. Yeah. And, you know, the amount of practice owners that have less than, I think, 1 month of business reserves is staggeringly high. And that's a problem. So I would really encourage new practice owners right away, you know, don't have the mindset that you always have to be broke. Make sure that you put in your profits right away. And there's very specific ways that you can do that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, Jen and I had this conversation when COVID-19 really started to catch fire in the States. We would go online and look at the different forums, and we were like, damn, you won't have no money in their practice.
Nope. They really don't. And it's like, and you're like wondering like, my gosh, what are some of these people going to do? And, you know, luckily some of the government stimulus certainly help. But I mean, do you want to be dependent upon that for the rest of your life? You know? So you have to like, and I'll use this example, like, you know, if you're going to go over a bridge and the bridge says that it can withstand 5,000 pounds. Well, do you think if your car weighs 5,001 pounds, that bridge is going to come crushing down? Probably not, right? Because the engineers built a factor of safety when they built the bridge, right? So the same thing, you have to kind of have the same mindset on your finances. You know, you really have to make sure that you include these buffers, these reserves, you know, so that if there is, you know, some kind of a something that happens like this, that you're not caught in the wind. And I think that's because you're only one health crisis away, you're one bad economy away, you're one bad stock market away from losing 40 to 50% of your wealth. So you just have to make sure that you prepare for that. And I think that's a big thing that we try to teach people.
So should we always have just a good amount of cash on hand then, is what you're saying?
Man, I've heard people say that cash is trash. And yeah. I'm like, you know what? Go ask some people after COVID-19 whether or not cash is trash right now. All right. I think people that had a couple $100,000 in their checking and savings account felt pretty good about having that money. You know what I mean? And it's nothing more than just being prepared for anything, because you just never know what's going to happen, and you need to make sure that you're prepared for that.
And you know, it's funny, man. I was talking to someone the other day, and I was like, we've lived through two times that have been difficult, COVID-19 and then also the 2008 crisis that you were referring to. And when you think about it, that's really not too far apart for someone to experience in a lifetime, right, Jen? So, I mean, it's kind of scary. So all the millennials out there should really be into savings, simply because we know this can happen.
Yeah. You know, we've got so accustomed as debt is a solution for everything, right? Like, this is a debt-based economy, and we just kind of use debt for everything. And I get it. I was just looking at one of our optometrists that just came on board. You know, they just walked out of school and they had $200,000 of debt between them, you know? And it's like they come out with this giant noose. You know, if you want to buy a practice, that's another $400,000. If you want to buy a house, it's $300,000. All of a sudden, you're looking at your balance sheet and like, oh my God, I owe $1 million.
Right.
So it can really catch up on you. And you know, you just have to like be cognizant of that. That's all. And get a plan to handle it.
Well, I think that's a great segue to the question I wanted to ask you, which is, when should an optometrist start thinking about getting the services of a financial planner? Because I do think that many of us out of school think, I don't have any money. All I have is debt. So what money would I be managing?
Yeah. Well, and I guess it all depends, but I would start right away, you know, especially for people that come out of school. You know, I think it's maybe an unpopular, but I've seen so many doctors or optometrists come out of school with a load of debt, right? And of course, you know, you get out of school and you like, you know, I've been in school for however long I was, and I want to kind of try to enjoy myself right now, but I have this $200,000 of debt. The ones that really attack that debt, like just lived on romaine noodles and cut their cable and just kind of really focused on production and producing and getting that debt paid off. You know, I noticed a few years later, they were in really, really good financial conditions because they had that mindset. But to your point, I don't think it's ever too early to start working with a financial planner. Now, if you're a practice owner, you know, you should start right away, because you're starting to grow this engine called your practice. And that practice does make money, right? And you got to make sure that money that you're making in your practice serves your household, not the other way around. And I think another point that I definitely want to make is that you really have to look at your household as like a parent company. And what I mean by that, like if you look at all the big corporations, Apple, Facebook, you know, the big corporations, right? They all own like 50 or 60 other junior companies, right? Mm-hmm. But all of those profits flow up to the parent company. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So when you look at your household like that, and you say, look, you know, my parent company is my household. Everything that I own, whether it's a 401k or a business or a piece of real estate or whatever it is, all of that should be for the benefit of my parent company, which is my household. And when you start thinking like that, then you start making sure that money flows up to you personally, because at the end of the day, you know, you look at the word economy, it actually means the management of the household. And really, all this world is made up of, you know, all the big buildings, everything that you see right there, it's owned by individuals. It's not owned by corporations. It's owned by individuals. So I would definitely make sure people understand that concept of running your household like a business. And, you know, but it's never too early to really put in good, simple principles to improve your money.
Well, I know you mentioned owning a practice, and earlier before we began recording, I had heard you talking a little bit about how much you really encourage doctors to consider that path.
Yeah.
Sometimes, though, it can be scary, especially for younger doctors coming out of school, to be faced with a job that's going to be working with someone else and getting a higher paycheck versus buying into a practice or even starting cold. Why do you feel like it is so important to think about long-term ownership for financial success later on?
Well, I mean, I certainly have seen it both ways, but I think when you look at, okay, so when you're a practitioner in an optometry practice, you get paid as a practitioner, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever that is, and you get a percentage of your production, and that's what your paycheck is, right?
Right.
When you own the practice, you also are afforded what's called your owner and executive pay. Because when you own a business, there's actually three responsibilities that you have. You have the practitioner role, you have the executive role, and you have the owner role. And to the degree that you're good at all three of them, that's what determines how much money that you can make. So I encourage people that if you're thinking about getting into ownership, you know, you can certainly make a lot more money doing that because, you know, if you run your business really, really well, you not only get your, you know, practitioner role, but pay, but you also get the ownership and executive profits of the business. And that could be, you know, depending on how big you want to get your practice, that could be $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 a year. And that gets you financially free pretty fast when you're making that kind of money. You know,
now, are you seeing a lot of optometrists in that realm of the 200 to 600 in profits? Or, I mean, like, what's the average that you're typically seeing?
I think it all depends on the type of practice owner that you have. You know, we have practice owners. We just got one that's doing probably around $600,000 or $700,000, and at a 30% profit margin, 25% profit margin. You know, you can do the math on that. And then I have some optometrists that you know, have multi practices, and they, you know, they're making $2, 3, 4 million a year of business revenue. But at 25%, that's $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 of income for themselves. So it just depends on what your game is, you know. And if your game, it's a hard game, you know, to own a practice. It's not easy.
Right.
But it's really how well you understand that owner and executive functions. That but they didn't teach you that in school.
Right.
You know? They didn't teach you how to do that. So you got to learn all those books that you got back there. That's how you learn that right there.
Books and podcasts and learning from other people's experiences, right?
That's right. That's right.
Well, one of the things we wanted to learn from you was how to maximize that value of your practice, because I know that's something that you really specialize in with your financial planning discussions. So How do you make a practice more profitable?
How do you make it more profitable? That starts with a bit of a mindset in that I think the first thing is, first, you have to know what your role is in the business. And if you're going to build a practice that's valuable, you gotta stop and think, who am I building this for? Like, who am I building this practice for? Am I building it just for me? Or am I building it for the next owner, my employees, the community at large? You know, who am I building it for? And I think once you get that mindset going first, then it makes it easy to then create the systems that you need to create in your business, so that which is really the first thing that I would do is start looking at, okay, what does my organization look like? Who does what function? You know, I go into an organization, there's an organization board there. Now think of that from a buyer perspective. If I go in an organization and I see that there's policies and procedures in place, if I see that people are moving around, they know what they're doing, that they're producing profits, that if I go to somebody at the reception desk and I ask them, hey, what is it that you do? And they can like snap answer right away, man, as a buyer, I'm going to pay you more for that practice because I don't have to do a lot of work to try to like fix it. You know what I mean? So that would definitely be number one, is creating really good systems in the business so that it can function without you necessarily having to be there. Everybody's dream is to build this business where everybody else is doing the work and you can just kind of like sit back and, you know, let them do the work. It's possible to do. And by doing that, you really make a valuable business because it's not dependent upon you 100%. So I think that would definitely be one thing you can do. What are some other things you can do?
These practices that you've had experience with, and, you know, with having these system and processes in place, I'm big into that. Jen, I tell you, I'm always – trying to find something online to streamline the process. I'm like, Jen, is this going to make your life easier?
Yeah. He does do that quite a bit. And I'm like, no, I do that myself. I don't care. We don't need to spend the quintessential doing it wrong person over here.
Is that you? Okay. So first thing is first, the moment that you can start to just give away things, you will feel free. And you will notice the numbers in your practice and the profitability of your practice will skyrocket the moment that you can start letting go. It's just a function of letting go. That's the hardest thing to overcome. Yeah, it really is.
Do you feel like when it comes to system and processes, is that something that inside of the practice, the team members, the leaders should set up? Or is it better to just always get a third party to come in and assess the scene and really put those system and processes in place? Because we always feel like we do things great, but in reality, it might be hurting us and not making the practice as lucrative as it could potentially be.
I think it's a smart thing to do to work with a consultant that understands your business, right? That understands optometry, okay? That has a proven track record and that has a proven management system that they utilize, right? There's statistics in place. There's measurements in place. You know, there's job descriptions in place. I think there's a lot of value to that since you don't have to create that yourself. Just look at what other people have done. I'm big in just copycatting. If something works for somebody else, I'm going to duplicate that as long as it works, right? But the amount of value that enhances a business is unbelievable, and what that would be. It really does turn a practice that's maybe doing $500,000 or $600,000 a year at a 10% profit margin. I mean, that's only going to sell for maybe two or three times your earnings. But when you can create almost like a franchise model, right, and duplicate that amongst practices, and you can get two, three practices going that are really producing a lot, you know, you can turn that into something that may sell for 6 to 7 times earnings, which is a big difference, you know, if that's the game for you, you know. But again, it's not all about the money. It really, you know, I'm a financial advisor, so of course, you know, it's a little bit about the money, right? But I think for me, I really want to make sure that your audience, don't build a business just to sell it for maximum dollars. You know, when I say building a business that has maximum value, it's just not value to you and money. It's the reward that you get for all of the relationships that you build. It's the community acknowledgments that you get. It's the, you know, satisfaction that you get seeing that your employees are doing well. You know what I mean? There's a lot of value that you try to build in a business. And when you take that mindset that I'm not doing this for just me, I'm doing it for others, it just seems to change how people view their business a little bit.
I agree with you 100%. And
thanks,
you know,
man.
That's one reason why, you know, I love working with Jen, simply because we have families and we put our families first before we do anything else. And
yeah,
with our business, as Jen always says, when it becomes not fun anymore, we're throwing it out the window. We're not dealing with it. You know what I'm saying? So I agree with you 100%. And that's I think it's key to always find a business partner that has the same mindset, but compliment you on wherever you're weak at as well to make things even better when it comes to building that business or practice, whatever it may be.
That makes sense. Look, if you're kind of a practitioner type of guy that really loves to just like practice medicine and just be in the chair and treat people, great. So just hire or partner with someone that has more of the owner executive mindset, you know, just work out that way. And you have a compliment there, but I think it can definitely work either way when you're doing that.
Absolutely. Well, I definitely know a lot of people probably listened to this, your advice earlier about letting go and educating the people around you to take some things off your plate is a common mistake that many of us as optometry business owners are making. One of the common things that I'll hear people say along that mindset is like, well, I'm so busy seeing patients. When am I going to train someone else to like take off these other things off my plate? So when you have someone who's kind of their excuses, like, well, someone's got to see the patients and that has to be me, so I don't have time to do anything else.
Yeah.
What do you encourage them to like rewire their brains to think about what's important to put the right strategies for success in place?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing to do, and you really have to do it on a bit of a gradient, meaning that you just can't just like try to go from 0 to 100 right away. You just have to like just say, okay, what can I get done here today, or you know, what is a battle plan that I can start with, that where I get just a couple of things. I just need a couple wins. That's all, right? Because I think a lot of us, we have this grandiose idea, we're going to build this humongous practice, and we're going to, you know, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I got like 20 people I got to see today. You know, yeah. No way I can get to like any of my executive functions. That's why I think you just have to know what role you're playing, right? Like if I'm good and carve out some time, like today I'm going to take 2 hours and I'm going to do some executive functions. I'm going to write up 2 job descriptions. That's it, right? And then just do that, okay? And then just try not to make it so overwhelming, because you're right, when you're starting, look, you got to produce, right? You got to make money. Yeah. And you got to make sure that the organization can stay there. So, which is again why I'm encouraging people to like make sure that every, you know, this is the first thing I tell every business owner. Because you'd mentioned, like both of you said, like, you know, the business is there to serve me. I'm not there to serve the business, but it kind of gets there to a degree to a lot of people, right? They're just like, mm-hmm. they're stuck in the business, right? Mm-hmm. That sucks. Like I've been there. It's like, I don't want to be a slave to this business. It's there to serve me. Right. Yep. And so when I tell every business owner, I want you to take the first 10% of the practice revenue, not the profit, the revenue, and pay yourself that money. That is the first and most successful thing that I can tell any practice owner to do, because that is the reward that you get for taking all the risk of owning that business. And if you don't do that at some point in time, you're going to get burnt out. And that's what burnt out, that's the whole concept of being burnt out. You're not a candle. You're not going to get burnt out, right? I heard someone say that. I really like that. The reason that you get burnt out is because you put so much forth, so much effort and work, and you didn't get the exchange back for it. So it's like, why am I doing all this work? You know? So I would encourage a lot of your listeners to make sure that they do that. If they own their business, take the first 10% of their practice revenue and set it aside in an account every week. And that is your owner pay. That's for you.
Daryl, I can't tell you how surprised I am with how this conversation is going. Pleasantly so, because our financial planning expert is telling us to pay ourselves, make our lives less stressful.
Yes.
Don't go into more debt.
No.
I mean, this is like all the stuff I wanted to hear, and it's fabulous.
See, it's simple, right? You do need a guy to help you execute all this stuff, because, you know, life gets in the way, and, you know, you need, you know, accountability for it. And that's where I think where people, especially practice owners, they, you know, they work with financial advisors. And I'm not knocking a financial advisor. I'm a financial advisor, but I really think that you need to work with someone specific in your industry that understands how your practice, how integral your practice, I don't even know if that's a word, your practice is. To your financial success. And that is, I know a lot about private practices, optometry practices. I mean, there's things I don't know about. I mean, some of the words you guys use, I'm like, oh my God, what does that mean? But you guys, here's the one thing, you guys always look so darn good, you know, and you got these spectacles, and I'm like, I'm jealous right now because I don't have any.
No worries. We can have to look like a rock star as well, man. So we'll get you squared away.
Okay, cool.
Well, one of the other things I wanted to pick your brain on this podcast was when I was first getting introduced to you, one of the calling card messages that they said that you really are an expert on is how to save a boatload on taxes.
Yes.
And every time I go to pay my taxes, it is like painful how yeah. much money. And I always think I'm going to be doing these things and I'll save this and save that. And each year is even worse. So I'm clearly doing something wrong. Please tell me how to save these boatloads.
Okay, well, this is certainly not an easy thing to do, because the Internal Revenue Service has the concept and the viewpoint that all of your money is actually their money. And they force you to use the tax code in order to prove to them that something, but they give you like, it's like 4 million words in the tax code, right? Which I think is like bigger than all the Harry Potter books put together, right? So you can imagine there's a lot of confusion there, and people go to their accountant thinking that the accountant knows every single passage of the tax code, and that's not fair. And that really isn't an accountant's job. They don't have that mindset. They're there to make sure that your taxes are compliant. They're not there to minimize the amount of taxes that you pay. Okay. So I think that's the first thing you have to like, make sure that you're working with an accountant that maybe does have a, the mindset that I don't want Jen to pay as much in taxes as she's paying right now. That'd be number one. Okay.
That'd be very important.
That'd be very, very important. Okay. So that would be number one, that Jen is paying too much in taxes. I need to figure out some things to do for her. Now, from there, there's certainly strategies that you can look at. I might just give you one real quick so you, because you are, you do own a business or you're going to be owning a business here pretty soon. Right. So there's a rule in the tax code that you can rent your house for 14 days out of the year. Okay. I know you're like, where's this going?
This sounds crazy, but keep going.
Stay with me. Okay. So and it came from, if you guys are golfers at all, I'm not a big golfer, but if you ever heard of the Masters tournament that they have on Augusta, Augusta,
yeah.
Georgia. Yeah. Okay.
One of my very best friends lives in North Augusta. And so she talks about every year during the Masters, it's a big business for everyone in the community to rent out their house for that week.
And you just nailed it on the head. They are allowed for 14 days. You are allowed to rent out your house 14 days out of the year and collect that money completely tax-free. So imagine these guys that have these huge houses on that golf course renting it out.
Just in that area.
I'm going to get to that right in a second. Okay. Yeah, it's everywhere, right? It's a rule. You can rent your house out for 14 days out of the year. So here's what they do. So they probably charge 10 grand a day. And they get 140 grand and they don't have to pay a lick of tax on that money. Okay. So now you guys are thinking, well, thanks, Eric. I don't have a house on the golf course, right? How do I take advantage of that? Okay. But you, if you have a business and you guys both have a business because, you know, they're your media company or your optometry company, right? So why can't you have an executive or officer meeting at your house? Mm-hmm. You, of course you can. Right. And all you would need to do is call up like a local restaurant or a hotel and ask them, say, hey, if I wanted to rent this place out for, you know, a day, how much would it cost me? And let's just say that it's like $1,000, you know, to do that. Okay, great. You have your proof. Right. So now have the meeting at your house, have the business pay the $1,000 that you otherwise would have spent at the hotel and simply have the meeting at your house. Keep good like notes that this, you have to have the meeting. You can't like not have the meeting.
Yes.
We're going to go play hoops and play some video games, you know, but have the meeting, right? But that's right there. That's $14,000 that you can use as a business expense and you get that money completely tax free just using the tax code. That's one, right? Now you can probably find, you know, hotels that would charge more and maybe it's $2,000 a day or, you know, or whatever it would be. But, you know, we've had people use that, save $25, $30,000 a year, just doing that one thing. But look, you know, saving taxes is not a static act. It's not something that you can just kind of sit around and hope it's going to happen. That ain't going to happen, right? It takes energy, willingness, follow through, and documentation. And that's what it takes to minimize your taxes. And that's why you see all of these guys that make, you know, millions of dollars a year. And you're like, how in the heck do they only pay 20, 25%, 15% in tax? I can tell you how they do it. They hire someone to do it, to go through the tax code and find all of these strategies that they can use to minimize their tax liability. They spend a lot of money to do it, but it saves them a boatload. But there are things that you guys can do on a smaller scale that can minimize your tax liability. That's one.
Wow. That's excellent. Daryl, kind of reminds me back when we first practiced together.
No, I'm messed up over here, man.
I know. We were just a larger group practice, and we had one big meeting every year. All the doctors went down to the beach. And I realize now, like, it was a great educational get together. It built a lot of camaraderie, but it was probably a tax write-off as well. So we worked for a very smart man.
Yep. I'm telling you, it paying for some advice like that is going to save you so much more money in the long run. It really is unbelievable. It really is. But look, you know, don't make financial planning complex. You know, I know I've probably thrown out a lot of, you know, technical things here. Really, financial planning is really not hard. And if you're a new owner, if you're getting out of school, you know, there's really four things that I say you should concentrate on. Number one, make sure that you have that you focus on production, producing income, and know how much money that you really need to make to live the life that you want to live. Set up a way for you to systematically and automatically siphon money off so that you can create some of those reserves. Get out of debt, bad debt, as fast as you possibly can. Now, when I say debt, not all debt is bad, right? But any debt that doesn't produce you any income, doesn't appreciate in value, or give you a tax break is bad debt. So that would be like cars, houses, credit cards. That's all bad debt. That all should be paid off immediately. And then make sure that you go out of your way to protect your assets. Like, you guys have this whole media company, right? I mean, all that should be like protected. Intellectual capital should all be protected. You know, you should all have that in like separate, you know, corporations where you guys hold all this stuff, because it's really, really valuable. You know, I went to your website. I mean, you guys have a ton of valuable content that should all be protected, you know, trademark, copyrighted, all that should be protected, you know? So I think that, but just try to keep it simple and just, you know, always assume that whatever you think the amount of money that you need in resources, it's probably more than that, because you have to factor in all the things that can happen, like a government shutdown, that can affect your money. And you need to have that factor of safety built in some way, somehow.
I want to circle back with the debt conversation, because my assumption would be student debt, bad debt, needs to get paid down, in your opinion.
I didn't want to offend a lot of people when they spend $200,000 and I said, that's bad debt. They're like, what? I was like, I just spent $200,000. You're telling me it's bad debt? It would certainly be debt that I would want you to attack and pay off. You know, there's 1,001 ways that you can pay off debt. You know, the best way is the one that keeps you motivated to stay on the schedule. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, there's definitely no like tried and true method. It's just the one way that makes you feel motivated to get yourself out of debt. But I definitely would like to attack student debt. I mean, it is a noose. I mean, I couldn't believe some of the numbers I'm seeing right now, especially young optometrists. And it's not like you're making like $200,000 or $300,000 coming out of school where you can pay that off right away. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, wow. I mean, they really have to like live on scraps for a couple of years. And you know what? If that's what it takes, that's what it takes.
Other caveat to that is you mentioned house as bad debt. And I was always under the impression like, well, you're building equity and the house will appreciate with time. A car obviously depreciates immediately. So yes, bad debt. I just bought a house. So is this really bad to take on debt? I want to get your opinion.
Okay, so look, I've tried to preach this for years, and I've come to the conclusion I cannot stop people from buying homes. And I'm not going to try to pay, right? And I changed my viewpoint on this. I'm like, look, your home is where you operate from. It's where you feel safe. It's where you create. It's where you probably have some of your best pleasure moments of your life is at home, right? So for me, I would want to have that place completely paid off. I don't want anyone to owe. I don't want to have a debt against that, okay? Now, is it bad debt? Well, okay. Does it appreciate in value? It can, right? Does it give you a tax break? Maybe. Does it produce any income? Heck no. That thing is a money pit, right? and it doesn't necessarily follow the three rules of borrowing, but if you've already borrowed the money, which you probably already have, enjoy it. You know, enjoy your house, but pay it off, you know, in a reasonable time frame, so you don't have all those interest costs that you're going to end up paying, because a $300,000 house is not a $300,000 house. It's a $600,000 house because of all the interest costs and the other expenses that are part of it. So I hope that answers that question.
That's very good advice. We all have different ways of looking at things. Same thing with buying a practice. You know, you're going into debt to do that at a certain point. And a practice can be like your home. Like, you need to pay the electricity and the plumbing, and it's, you know, depreciating in the same sort of way. So it's kind of good to get these a varied perspective on what we're spending money on at the end of the day.
I would say anything that you borrow money for that's going to allow you guys, again, to create more income. So, you know, whatever, buying a building, right, that would be good debt. A good marketing program, hiring a consultant, all those things, I think, you know, are going to build value for, you know, personal enhancement things. Those are all going to build value for you. If you have to borrow for some of those things, then definitely do that, right? It's just the knucklehead stuff that people borrow money for, you know, that I think is problematic. And that's where, you know, we try to teach good habits for people, because that does restrict you to that degree when you have a load of debt. And, you know, it's just, you probably, if you ever felt it, if you ever paid anything off, you're like, oh, I feel free, you know, but the system is geared towards that. I mean, the system is geared to make interest rates super low. So everybody it's easy to borrow money, right? Mm-hmm. They make interest rates really low. So nobody saves anything, because why would I only earn like 0.000% on my money? Why would I do that? Right. Mm-hmm. They hurt everybody in the stock market, because that's the only place that you're ever going to make any money. Right. And, you know, they make the tax code so like mind numbingly, like complicated, that nobody takes advantage of it. And that's, they kind of created a perfect system to make a bunch of financial slaves. So I'm like, we're getting a little deep here, but I'm just like, I think that's the thing we're trying to fight against, you know, not doing those things that have led people to the financial condition that they're in right now.
Yeah. So let's talk about accountants. You know, yeah. Jim and I have one for Defocus Media. You know, what should we look for in an accountant? Because, I mean, you're telling me all these little things that I never knew about, and I feel like my accountant should be telling me this stuff. And Jen, I mean, do you feel the same? Did you know about all these little tips that
we today? The accountant that I hired to help do my taxes, I always like, oh gosh, it was less expensive when I put it in H&R Block than after you spit it out.
So like, I mean, like, should we be expecting this, or like, how do you get your best bang for your buck when you're hiring an accountant? Because I feel like some of this stuff we'll never know, and there's only so much knowledge we have to actually know what to hold them accountable for.
Yeah, I think for the first part, you know, you have to work with someone that has some willingness to understand the tax code and has the mindset that they're going to try to, they want to minimize your tax liability. Now, they may not have ever said that. Right. I mean, when you're interviewing an accountant, you really have to ask them, like, what's your viewpoint on taxes? Because a lot of them will just say, you know, my job is just to make sure you don't get in trouble. My job is to make sure you file on time. My job is to make sure that your numbers are correct. They're a compliance officer. That's what they are for the IRS, if you really look at it. Now, I'm generalizing here. That's not all accountants, but that may be the one that you have. I hope they're not listening right now. But I think the key is that you just have to find one that has the same mindset of like, you know, I don't want to have to pay all this money in taxes. What are some legitimate strategies that we can look at to pare this number down? And they have willingness to do that. That's the toughest fight that I have, because look, I got like, I don't like paying taxes. I will pay taxes. You know, I don't, but I never read anywhere where as a productive citizen, it's my job to maximum fund the IRS. Right. And I think the idea is that, the IRS, gave you this tax code to utilize. You just have to understand how to utilize it. But to go back to your point, you just have to interview some accountants. I mean, I can certainly give you guys names of an accountant that I use, or some other ones, and for your area that other clients of mine have used. And then you can just go interview them. It's not complicated to change accountants. People have this idea that, or you can't work with someone that's not like local. That's not true. My accountant's in New Jersey. I'm in Florida, right? I have an attorney that's in Nevada. So, I mean, the idea that you need to work with someone locally, don't have that consideration, you know, most importantly is just minimizing your taxes, but they should communicate with you. I mean, you guys should be talking to your accountants like at least once a quarter, maybe more depending on your businesses. And, you know, I don't know how you guys make income in your businesses besides the optometry practice, but, you know, I'm assuming that you're going to monetize this soon.
It's been monetized.
Yeah, there you go. So
we love doing this, but yeah,
we like doing it for the money too. I like the money too. Good. So yeah, you just have to start looking at, you know, again, this is where you start have to really focus on treating your household like a business and having that mindset. Like, my taxes are my biggest expense, and they really are. They're probably your biggest expense. So you better know a little bit about how to minimize them, or at least go to someone that does and cares about doing that.
Well, Mr. Miller, I really appreciate all your insights today, because you gave us not only expert advice on your expertise, but on some of the other professionals we should be working with, what to look for with them. And I have a feeling a lot of people are going to want to reach out to you for help. So please share your contact information so that they can get in touch with you.
Well, I think the first thing you can do is you can go to wealthforoptometrists.com, wealthforoptometrists.com, and we've created a free financial success guide for optometrists. So go there, download that book. You know, it's geared for practice owners. We're going to go through some of the metrics that you should be keeping an eye on in your practice. And then, of course, you know, items in your household that you should also pay attention to. But you can also go to econologicsfinancialadvisors.com. But I would start with wealthforoptometrists.com. That's the first place to go.
Thank you so much for your time this evening. And we can't wait to have you on again to cover topics as they come along in the future. So we just appreciate
anything. You guys want to talk about anything? Like when it comes to money, I will, you know, I'll be more than happy to come on. You guys are fun.
I love it, man. I think we should make this, if not a biannual, an annual thing, Jim, because Eric, man, I love your energy and just your insight and your love for what you do.
Yeah.
The love for what we do with eye care, man.
I can tell.
Match made in heaven. So, we got to get you back on the show, man, and make this magic happen again.
Any money related concepts, anything like that, practice enhancement, whatever you want to do, man, I'm there.
All right.
Great.
We love it.
All right.
Thanks for tuning in. It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover, and the lovely Dr. Jennifer Lyerly, your famous opto nerd. Make sure you guys check us out on the Defocus Media platform, whether it's the website, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, you name it, we're everywhere. Thanks as always. Have a great one. Stay healthy, stay blessed, and peace. All right, colleagues, and it's a wrap. Thank you dearly for hanging out with the Defocus Media team. We hope truly something resonated with you. And if it did, be sure to give us 5 stars. And make sure you follow us on all social media platforms. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, you named it. And our handle is at Defocus Media on all platforms. And until next time, be sure to keep it 2020. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.